Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I think primarily the focus will be who's rested. Who's rested, who hasn't pitched a couple days in a row. And work it that way until Brandon becomes available. And when he becomes available, he's still not going to be an everyday kind of a thing. So I will work off numbers. But I think with this particular group, a lot of it will have to do with who's most rested.
Oh, yeah. It's Joe Maddon talking about who's going to close for the Chicago Cubs until Brandon Morrow comes back. And then even when Brandon Morrow comes back, it's not like that guy is going to be able to go 2 days in a row.
I was going to say, and then when Brandon Morrow goes on the disabled list, who's going to close?
Right. And
like, because, and that's not a, it's just look at his career. He's had one healthy year in a 12-year MLB career. One.
And he, when he did go on the DL last year, apparently Joe Madden's boss really angry at Joe Maddon because of it, because he used him 3 days in a row one time, which he pointed out during the season and after the season.
Yeah. Not too pleased. Wonder why.
Yeah.
Not maintaining or on maintenance days for the guy who is constantly battling arm issues.
The whole year is set up for all the pressure to be on Joe. There's nothing else. They've done everything else. Barring a trade or a big free agent signing, which they're not doing and not going to do, they've changed every other coach. They've talked about how there's more urgency. They've brought in new bench coach personality who's right there and ready if you want to just move things over. They've put front office assistants essentially into coaching positions right there in the dugout next to Joe. There's nothing left. If they lose 8 out of 10 at some point, where else are you pointing?
Well, yeah. And I mean, I thought that was, yes, obviously the quotes that came out and the news that came out in regards to Chris Bryant specifically, but some of the other young hitters as well with Chili Davis, and then how Jim Hickey was here and then gone all of a sudden. It's like those were the handpicked Joe guys that were going to be the difference, replacing coaches that helped win a World Series for the Chicago Cubs. It's like you better take a big, significant step if you're making those changes 1 year after you won a World Series. And what did you see? You saw a pitching staff that everything went to hell with it until Cole Hamels showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Then things started to turn around finally for that starting rotation.
You saw an offense.
And then you saw an offense that was just, I mean, you had Javier Baez take a huge step in his career offensively, and you had a lot of guys take a significant step back.
It was it was supposed to be, you know, guys improving their situational hitting with the new hitting coach who was good at that. And that's kind of exactly the opposite of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't happen. They just kept trying to hit homers, and they did not hit them in the second half to the rate that they did. Cleaning up something that came up earlier, Daryl Dawkins, 1975, and Bill Willoughby, 1975, the first two NBA guys to go straight from high school. But 1 year before that, Moses Malone went straight to the ABA from high school. So we were on it.
That's
with
right.
Moses and Chocolate Thunder.
That's right. Feel good about that. Forget your research projects. We can do this. We got our
screw
own.
You.
We're our own sports almanacs.
We don't need producers. We'll run our own board.
Damn right.
Like some people used to do back in the day. You know? Don't take
it personally. Whoa.
Studs,
you're trying to talk me out of a job here.
Hey.
You know that, right? You know who used to run his own board? First of all, Jonathan Brandmeier used to run his own board for years and years.
Yeah.
No, a guy who was working at the score now used to run his own board.
I'm sure Mac did.
100%.
Yes. Mac, want to be in control of something? No. Never would have guessed it. You don't mean to tell me. If Danny Parkins had a clue how to run a board, I'm sure he'd be the same way.
He'd be doing it.
Guy didn't know how to press the button to save his life, though, I'm sure.
McNeil, in 92, McNeil comes over after having been Chet's guy. You know, he gave Chet a wrap-up, my friend, and then he moved over to the score. And as he started hosting in the afternoons, he was running his own board.
So how hard was it then to...
I wasn't there. Okay. Because I got there in 94, and I heard, oh, yeah,
he was done with the board.
He was done.
He
had moved over to the host chair.
I was just curious how hard it was to then, if you're running your own board and doing a show, where does the cart toss come in? Like, is it a next level of, I mean, that's an extra step that you're trying to account for.
Well, the old setup on Belmont, I remember you got like five cart machines over there to play your commercials. Mm-hmm. You know, the hosts used to have two cart machines to play their little sound drops and stuff. Yeah, so but how's he doing that? Where is he getting the commercials and the host carts?
Right. Crazy.
I don't know. Well, no wonder it didn't last.
Impressive more than anything.
3 days a week with Hanley and 2 days a week with Boers. That was the first afternoon show. Mac and Hanley and Mac and Boers.
It's just so crazy to me that like the changing regularly of, okay, well, you're going to be co-host for a couple days a week, and this is going to be your co-host a couple days of the week. It's like stability. Is that a good thing? Is it, you know, having the same people to hear time and time again? Is that good?
I guess it depends what your goal is.
I guess so.
You know? Are you looking for quality and consistency? Or are you looking for personal happiness and satisfaction?
Yeah, I guess so. It's crazy to me how things are programmed sometimes, and like 25 years ago, and then there's other examples if you want to go find them as well that aren't so much happening here. This hour brought to you by Team Hochberg, by the way.
Thank
Visit
you.
The new website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com.
All right, so there's a bunch of stuff that MLB teams use that we barely have an understanding of. Rapsodo. You familiar with Rapsodo? It is a data collection unit. It is basically, it's the spin rate thing. It is the best thing that you measure your spin. Rapsodo meets you where you are, whether it's the batting cage or the driving range, with app-based displays. They use it for baseball. You can use it for golf and stuff like that, but it's, you know...
It's probably what's used in the golf simulators.
Could be.
Right?
Could
like, when you do the golf swing and you're playing the courses that are on the screen, wouldn't that be probably the same thing?
And they're analyzing your swing, and then...
It's like, oh, that was a 260-yard drive, and it wound up here.
So when you're getting a lesson inside...
Very similar thing.
Yeah, inside the golfsmith, you're getting a lesson. That could very well be what they're using. And they also use Rapsodo in spring training to get data on pitchers. And they use something called the Edgertronic cameras. Right now, at Cubs camp, Tommy Hotovy has two different mounds wired. He's got two mounds. Wow. Hot mound on mound action.
Yeah.
And it
Carl
gives,
Edwards is pausing on top of one of them.
100%. It gives, he wants as many relievers as possible to pitch on those mounds that are rigged with Edgertronic high-speed cameras and Rapsodo data collection units. They will give the pitchers footage and information to pore over as they refine their deliveries. Starting pitchers will also get time on those mounds as we get closer to when the games begin. Tommy said, having two mounds wired lets me get six guys a day. So he's getting six guys every day. We get guys on there on a consistent basis, really get baselines, get video. Guys come in right when they're done, are able to watch that and compare data and see where they're at. So they put themselves in the Edgertronic, or they film themselves with this Edgertronic camera. Then they sit there and pick it apart, frame by painstaking frame, over and over and over again. Am I the only geek that would be interested in hanging out and watching that footage?
I would be for a short amount of time. I don't know what the shelf life is for that and for me staying interested that much. Like, is that something? I'm curious here.
Yeah.
Because pitchers seem like they're a funky bunch. They go to extremes in whatever way that their kind of habits are.
Right.
You have some that
I didn't
hate.
Know they sang with Marky Mark. I had no idea.
Exactly.
I had no idea.
But
makes a lot of sense.
Just a group of like guys that just they are very much creatures of habit. And I can't help but think of like Cubs that had issues last year. Yu Darvish, we know that he wasn't healthy probably way back in spring last year, and he got off to a rocky start, and then the mental side of it took its toll on him, and was next to nothing, less than nothing, that he ended up giving you. But like Tyler Chatwood, who, how many times was it after games where he'd walk six and be out of the game in the third inning? Did you hear, in my own head, and I'm overthinking things and whatnot?
He figured something out, supposedly.
Yeah, okay. I'll believe it.
He went and worked with two of his high school coaches in the offseason, Tyler Chatwood, and they figured out two of his own old high school coaches. They figured out that he was doing this weird thing, and you can picture it as I'll say it, where his pitching hand got pointed towards third base, before he would rear back and fire, and that was setting off some kind of chain reaction in his mechanics that was throwing off the control. Supposedly.
Okay. So Tyler Chatwood's fixed. That's what we know.
That's his
Tyler
story.
Tyler Chatwood's fixed.
That's his story, and he's sticking to it.
That's in our spring training bingo card that we have to put together of all the stories that we get each and every year.
Blank is fixed.
Whichever team. So-and-so is fixed. Free agent disappointment bouncing back.
Uh-huh.
Like, hey, Tyler Chatwood.
You know
that's
my favorite. This blank is in the best shape of his life. This year, that's Daniel Palka. Okay. Daniel Palka at White Sox camp is in the best shape of his life.
Man, and he's bound to hit 40 home runs as a result. You always get the stories of best shape of his life.
Yes.
It's going to be a huge, monstrous year for fill-in-the-blank player.
This texture says, no speaks. You're not the only guy who wants to watch six pitchers fire away on two mounds. It's a specific market, but you're not alone. Thank you, sir. Come with me. See, here's the deal. The Edgertronic camera is named after a guy named Thomas Edgerton. If you're near a computer and you got a minute or you got your phone, Google Harold Edgerton. Harold Edgerton. And he was an MIT professor and like a hero of my father's because my dad was a big photographer. He used to,
Herb was a big photo guy, huh? But
yeah, you had a dark room in the basement. I used to go down there and help him develop films while he listened to ball games late at night. It's awesome. Good memories. But Edgerton is the guy who filmed, who took pictures of like a droplet of milk falling in the milk and it all pops up and it looks like a crown.
Mm-hmm.
And people saw that for the first time ever. And they're like, oh my God, that's what liquid looks like. What? When it's captured like that? Or the very famous photo of the bullet going through the apple.
Mm-hmm.
And so the apple's exploded on one side and the other side, and you capture the bullet in motion. Freaking badass, Harold Doc Edgerton from MIT. So I love that the Edgertronic camera is named after him.
Yeah.
So I'm geeking out hard on Edgertronic video.
There you go. It's like the Freak on a Leash video from Korn back in the day of like the bullet that's fired from a cartoon and then it goes into real life and it explodes different things in a kitchen and whatever else that it tracks through. Like there's a lava lamp that's in there at some point and whatnot, but it's the same kind of exact same thing.
You're following the bullet all the way around.
You follow the bullet for 3 minutes or whatever and it's blowing up a cookie jar in the side of a house and whatever else.
See, there you go. See, I love that.
Edgertronic.
Edgertronic.
Hope he got a little chunk, or at least his descendants got a little bit of chunk of money for
that. Got a little piece, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And they deserve that. Texture says, John Lester told Tommy Hotovy he could take his two wired mounds and his Rapsodo and shove them up his bleach. Now, you know who would have said that is Lackey.
Right. Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
I don't need that. I don't need that.
Right. I can't imagine what John Lackey. Okay, here's this new technology that we have. We're gonna sit down and analyze this for the next 45 minutes. Ooh, once you're done throwing
garbage, I don't need that.
I need my Bush Light, and I'm gonna be down here in the clubhouse, and I'm getting a haircut and for some jewelry.
I didn't know John Lackey was on King of the Hill.
He turns into Boomhauer.
I had no idea he was on there. My favorite Lackey moment is gonna be. And for a long time, it's going to be that moment. Me and Parkins were backstage in a green room, and Lackey and Ross, I think, walked in. And Lackey he was quadruple fisted. He had two, I think they were vodka tonics in one hand and two more in the other. It was quadruple fisted. And they were all for him because, he didn't want to go to the bar twice or three times or four times.
And, be efficient.
And Parkins said, hey, so you're catching up there, huh? Catching up. And Lackey said, well, what makes you think I'm catching up? So he'd been just rolling
keeping pace.
He's just keeping
catching
pace.
Up.
That's all.
We're going to have some fun tonight. Yeah. It was awesome atmosphere here tonight. It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Boomhauer.
Yeah. I don't know, Lackey. I could listen to that guy. Trust me.
Man.
I could listen to him talk, though, just because it's one of the best Chicago sports, voices. And I'm not talking about announcers, but just in terms of... Speaking voices of athletes. At least not necessarily the best, but the ones I enjoyed the most.
Chicago speaking voice draft. You taking John Lackey?
Yeah, taking John Lackey and his haircut.
I'll take Bill Cartwright.
Bill Cartwright's a great one. That's a good one to
feel
go
good
to.
About, I feel good
I remember
about that one.
On the 90s Bulls idea, B.J. Armstrong, thinking like, oh, young, smiley B.J., he looks like just a happy kid. Then he has the deep thunder voice, the thunder throat, like when you'd hear him talk and get interviewed and be like, wow, that came out of nowhere. I was not expecting that whatsoever. Guy had pipes, though.
All right, I think we went too deep on Chicago voices.
Right, I don't even know if I'm making that as a pick, just Lackey, as an observation.
Lackey and Cartwright, and then we're done, just like that. Phone lines are wide open for you if you want to talk Edutronic cameras,
and why wouldn't you?
Or dunk contests, or iconic speaking voices in Chicago sports history. Will Perdue in a few minutes to talk about Michael Jordan on the eve of his 56th birthday. Yes, you're old. It's 670 The Score.
Fair expectations. I think we're trying to win a World Series. I didn't come here for a haircut, you know what I mean? We're trying to get it on. I came here for jewelry.
Give the man his jewelry. Give him whatever he needs.
I could listen to him talk about anything all day long. Break down pitching mechanics, break down... I'm sure foreign policy would be great with one John Lackey.
There's a pretty good idea from a texter. John Lackey on the porch. Be an excellent way to fill time on the Marquee Network.
It would be great because on his porch, who knows who's going to stop by? Is it, I think, Jake Arrieta?
Well, how you doing? Look, Jake Peavy's here.
I think Arrieta lives right down the street from him. Kevin Millar, well, maybe you don't want to do that, but Millar is in the neighborhood there.
There's a spittoon there on the corner.
An old brass spit.
Right? There's a banjo on one side and an old mandolin.
Now you're talking my style.
I know we are. There's two strings on a mandolin sitting off the other side.
Let's go. I got a long memory.
But yeah, that's my of Chicago sports athletes or not even athletes, executives for that matter. I'm taking his voice. I'm taking
taking
him as my number one pick.
Texas reminded me of Joe Kane, the great Joe Kane. If you
gotta refresh me.
Chicago Bears middle linebacker.
I know the name.
Yeah, Joe Kane. Yeah. he was talking like down here. Like, hey, what's going on, man? Hey, Joe Kane, he was funny too.
Funny ass dude. And he was a great guest, and then they gave him a couple hosting shifts on The Score. Including an overnight. They gave Joe Kane a solo overnight.
I heard this story.
Man. And I'll never forget Joe Kane in the middle of the night. Like, come on, man. I need some phone calls.
Well, somebody just call.
Somebody, please. Oh, God. So great. Paul Edinger, former Bears kicker, Paul Edinger.
He had the weird, like, golf swing influenced turn thing when he kicked. Remember?
Mm-hmm. I like them French fried potatoes. He sounded a lot like Sling Blade, did Paul Edinger.
And something was, as Bernsey said sometime about Paul Edinger, there was something just not quite right with Paul Edinger.
Didn't Paul Edinger, wasn't he the one that got hammered in Florida and was driving over mailboxes? Am I confusing former Bears kickers? But wasn't that a thing that Paul Edinger was...
It could be.
In Florida and got arrested for either a DUI or on suspicion of a DUI because he had run over, like, mailbox after mailbox after mailbox right in a row.
James Big Cat Williams, that's a hell of a voice still.
He's like when you watch the news and they have the person that doesn't want to be on camera and they don't want their identity to be revealed. And you hear, like, the computer program voice.
That's Big Cat.
That's Big Cat on postgame for you. Like, that's what his voice sounds like. It's so deep. And it's like, that's just not, no one speaks like that, but Big Cat does. He sounds like that special voice on the news.
A lot of people bringing up Carlos Boozer, maybe just because I'm on. But like Boozer's actual speaking voice, nothing special.
Not memorable at all.
But the shouting voice on the court, give me that, Joe! Help one! Yeah! That's right, Joe!
Help!
Come on! Help! Rotato! My bad! After his phony help defense.
That's right.
Carlos Boozer was a hype man. Like Carlos Boozer
definitely was.
If you ever listened to Insane in the Membrane.
Mm-hmm.
Insane in the Brain!
That's him. Carlos in the
that's
background.
That's Carlos Boozer in the background.
Does Tibbs in
up.
His ice!
Pretty good.
Did that do anything for you?
Pretty good.
Worthy of the list?
Or Phil.
Yeah.
Tony! Screaming for Kukoc.
Yeah, right after he has the quick whistle.
It's a very sensible, immediate transition to Wayne in Lafayette, who's on 670 The Score. What's up, Wayne? How are you?
Hey, Matt. Hey, Shep. What's going on, man? It was so great to meet you guys at that Mac and Parkin deal before the Super Bowl on that Friday.
Yeah, I remember that, Wayne.
A fun day, Wayne.
It It was great, guys, man. And you guys know how to put on a party up here at the store, and I just want to thank the world for you. But anyways, yeah, hey, mighty great to meet you guys, man. You're super people. And anyway, hey.
You can keep the compliments going.
What do you think about the Bears missing out on this Hunt guy? Are we happy about that? And do you think Howard can snap out of it this year after 1 year behind our new coach, Nagy?
Thank you, Wayne. Wayne, giving us timely Bears running game conversation.
Bears are back. Like, Bears are back when you are in the middle of baseball conversation and debating over the greatest Chicago sports and athletes' voices of all time, and you get the Kareem Hunt. Should the Bears have pursued him more thoroughly than they did? The Bears are back. They're front of mind. They're the big team in town, and they're finally good again.
They need a load running back. They need a three-down running back. And, I mean, I love Tariq Cohen, but it's to the point now that when he's out there, you know what he's going to do, mm-hmm. and it's terrific what he does. But Jordan Howard is not a guy you want out there.
Right.
If you want to disguise your offense, you need a guy who can be a three-down back, or you need somebody who's at least going to hit the line quicker in your shotgun, in your zone read plays than Jordan Howard does. I don't know what it is. Something about that pause at the top of the play for both the zone reads and I think the RPOs as well. It's just Jordan Howard doesn't hit the line with a head of steam and run like he can out of that particular offense. They transition in the final month of the year to running with Trubisky under center. And just like, okay, we're calling a run play.
Right.
This is a run play. And on those plays, Jordan Howard ran with a ton more authority and had more success.
It's almost like he's trying to do what Le'Veon Bell does, just not nearly as well. Where there's the hesitance, where there's patience, waiting for a hole.
Yeah.
Okay, don't just run where the hole's supposed to be. Wait for something. And it just is, it's not nearly as efficiently done or as well performed as mm-hmm. Le'Veon Bell. It's mm-hmm. like a poor man's version of that, essentially.
Yeah, you can't really do it. It's a very specific skill.
Is that another segment?
Can't really do it.
Parkins gonna do. You and Parkins can do one day. Like next time that you're in, can't do it's off. Can't really do it. Don't know what the circumstances of that might be. But
oh God,
I'm down for calls on it.
This is Alex in Orangeville. I don't know where Orangeville is, but Alex is there, and now he's calling us. Hello, Alex.
Hey guys, really enjoying it this morning. Good conversation.
Thanks, sir.
My question is: last year, you know, they bumped the start of baseball back earlier. That is, and I remember, you know, snow falling with the White Sox opener, and you know, there's the wacky Cubs Braves game with all that rain and sleet and all those runs getting scored. And
that was on your wedding day.
Later, but
yep,
yeah. I mean, do you think that's working? And you know, it's not really balanced either, because if you're in Arizona or Florida, you don't have, you know, snow in play.
No. So he's wondering if you're starting baseball earlier is leading to more rainouts. It's been an awkward problem at the beginning of several seasons in recent memory that they have the bad rainouts like that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's weather. It's unpredictable. Yes, it's going to be cold and wet and sloppy in April and into May with that. But what's the resolution? You kick baseball back a week, 2 weeks, and then what do you have? World Series games being played 2 weeks before Thanksgiving? Is that what anybody wants?
Shorten the
season.
Baseball
already, like, more doubleheaders. Because part of the reason it got moved up is because players wanted more days off, more scheduled days off. And, I mean, it's a long season,
right?
Obviously. You start in cold, if you're in the Midwest or in the North at all, the last days of March, the first days of April, and it goes until, if your team's good, it goes until the end of October when the weather's has turned
right
by then, and you're playing in 35 degrees, 40 degrees,
man,
if it's a balmy night.
You talk about the challenges of the upcoming collective bargaining agreement. You start talking about wanting to take some games away from ownership and organizations. Taking, what, 10, 15 gates away from owners, that is not going to go well.
Right.
That part of it's not going to go well. And it's the same with doubleheaders and trying to consolidate and essentially removing one day's worth of gate.
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Exactly. Like, that part of it. And, I mean, the idea is, just shorten the schedule to 154 like it used to be. Okay, great in theory. not realistic when you talk about the millions and millions and millions that would be lost across baseball.
It's 670 The Score. He's Nick Shepkowski. I'm Matt Spiegel here on a Saturday. Shep is in for Rosenbloom, I think, unless I'm in for Rosenbloom and you're in for
something
me.
Something like that.
We're trying to figure it out. But either way, tomorrow Michael Jordan is 56. And this made you want to talk to an old teammate of Michael's, along with other Bulls things and NBA things here at All-Star Weekend.
Well, and I wanted to talk to Will Perdue because it's spring training-wise, and last year Will Perdue for us was also breaking down White Sox pitchers and Cubs pitchers, and he's a man that just attended his first Super Bowl in person before. Tons of things to talk to about with Will Perdue. What's going on, Will?
Oh, not too much, but I'm going to give you guys an inside scoop right now if you want to talk about basketball.
We're ready.
Or, excuse me, talk about baseball real quick.
Okay.
Okay, we'll take it.
What pitcher, and I'll see if you guys can lead me along the way here, what pitcher for the Chicago Cubs will be a free agent next year?
Cole Hamels
is one.
Yeah, but a guy that's come up through the Cubs organization originally with the Pirates.
Originally with the Pirates?
Sorry.
Pitcher.
I'm missing it.
Where am I? Hendricks?
Kyle Hendricks, Rangers.
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 Yeah.
Pirates is
Rangers.
What threw me. Yeah?
So does he have one more year of arbitration, or this was his last year of arbitration?
I think I think he's got a couple more years. Let's see here. Kyle Hendricks is not a free agent. Let's see.
Year three of arbitration coming up this offseason.
So 2021. Got two more years for Kyle Hendricks.
The Cubs did a nice job of not bringing him up early, but he's a guy that I, as a Sox fan, will be keeping an eye on because I would love to see him on the South side because, as we know, because of the way he pitches, he can pitch for a long time because he's not a power pitcher. He never has been a power pitcher. He's a location guy, and he can pitch for a long time, especially since my understanding is he's worked on got a few kinks figured out with his delivery, and is ready to roll. And he didn't necessarily make a hardcore guess, but he basically talked about this team's ready to go back to the World Series, which to me looks pretty good. I don't understand all these predictions about this team could only win 82 games. Really?
Yeah, we went over that in the first hour there a little bit, and I'm just concerned if you're counting on so many people to have a bounce back year that it seems a bit unrealistic and far-fetched myself. That's where my concern comes in as a Cubs fan.
Your guy Kyle Hendricks is the most fun I've ever had talking pitching with a guest. Between him and Steve Stone. I mean, Stone, who just knows so much about pitching and isn't afraid to tell you that. And then Hendricks, who knows a lot, and you got to pull it out of him a little bit more. Hendricks is a brilliant, brilliant guy.
Well, he's very quiet. He doesn't like to talk about himself. But if you give him a little time and you massage him correctly, he'll start talking to you about the game, and then you can't get him to shut up.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. No, Hendricks is he's a fun interview, and he's fun when he starts to break down. I don't know. He's like mini Maddox, and I don't want to compare anybody to Greg Maddox.
I'm a little premature. I thought he only had 1 year left on arbitration, but I know that he's definitely worth every penny that he's getting as far as reliability and the number of innings that he pitches on a yearly basis.
So were you the guy, you know, during those Bulls title runs, during those playoff runs, you're a guy reading box scores and sneaking away to a ball game every once in a while? Was that you, Will Perdue?
That was me. And probably one of the most disappointing playoff runs that we have had was in 93 when I think the Sox were primed to go to the World Series and I think were possibly the favorites to win it. And what happened?
They lost to the Blue Jays.
Well, I think that was the year of the lockout, was it not?
Oh, that's 94. No, yeah, so 94 was 94. The lockout. Yeah,
yeah,
93 was when they lost in the ALCS to the Blue Jays.
They lost to the Blue Jays. The next year, I think they were the favorite. Because I remember we would always complain that Phil was running too long with the practices in October because it took us so long to get to the South side at that time of the evening.
Yeah, White Sox, that lockout came when the White Sox were 67-46 in first place. Frank Thomas was having one of the greatest years of his life, and Tony Gwynn was, you know, thinking about
chasing
hitting 400, and yeah. It was a damn shame. Luckily, you could just, you know, turn the attention to basketball and roll to another title.
Those were great days.
I'm one of the fortunate fans there. I wasn't from Chicago. I'm fans of both the Cubs and the White Sox. I didn't grow up there, so I don't, you know, my allegiance obviously was to the White Sox because of Reinsdorf, but at the same time, when I would go to games, I got to know, you know, Ozzy, I got to know Frank. I got to know some of the players, and that's when you kind of have you feel closer to that team because of that.
Will, with it being All-Star weekend in the NBA, it's always fun to watch as a fan, especially tonight's made for the kids and the teenagers with the dunk contest and three-point contest. Essentially, a handful of players get to participate in either the Saturday night activities, the Friday night activities, or the actual game. What's the rest of the league do? What did you do as a player when All-Star weekend hit? Like, is it getaway?
You're saying you didn't play in the All-Star game? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's not breaking news. I'm just curious. Like, what do you do? Like, is it viewed as vacation and I'm getting away for the weekend? Is it, all right, I'm going to pay attention to my family for the first time in 3 months?
Like, it's definitely – and here's the other thing. This is where the league, in my opinion, has gone a little soft. We basically would always play that Thursday night game on TNT. So then we would have to, you know, if we were on, and more times than not, because of this time of year, I think this time of year was Disney on Ice. So we were on the West Coast somewhere, whether it be Seattle, LA, Oakland, Denver, whatever. So most of the guys would, at least in the Bulls case, would find somewhere on the West Coast to go, because the last thing you wanted to do, because we always knew practice on Monday at 4 o'clock because we always had a game on Tuesday. That's how short so-called air quotes All-Star break was. Because we were always one of the better teams, and because of Michael, we always had that last game on Thursday night on TNT, where some teams, you know, played on Wednesday and had Thursday off. So Friday was a travel day. More than likely, Sunday was a travel day. So you really only had one full day to kind of All-Star break it. So, you know, more times than not, we would be in California somewhere. But you would be surprised. Send somebody to Vegas right now and see how many NBA guys you see in Las Vegas right now. You'd be surprised.
Michael turns 56 tomorrow. And I'm wondering, like, these days, when his name comes up, and you kind of close your eyes and you picture some moment where you guys shared the court. You're here for a long time, 88 to 95. Like, what comes to mind? Is there a specific game that comes to mind? A practice moment where you're just like, man, that dude is the greatest and I get to be here with him?
Well, that happened quite a bit, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And I'll use an example because of a guy that's been in the news a little bit because he seems to be flip-flopping on who seems to be the man, because this time last year, Scottie Pippen said LeBron was the guy. Now he's saying MJ's the guy. But one of the things that MJ used to always do, and this is a practice story, if he felt that Scottie or somebody, you know, was kind of feeling a little bit full of themselves, wasn't practicing hard enough, or was enjoying the fruits of their labor a little too much, maybe partying a little too much, he would go over to Phil and be like, hey, Phil, put that guy on the other team. Meaning, hey, put him with the second guy. So, you know, me, BJ, Stacy, Craig Hodges, all of a sudden, Scotty. And then eventually everybody knew what that meant. That meant that Michael was going at him, Michael was going to teach him a lesson, and Michael was going to let him know that, hey, man, you never rest on your laurels. Our job is to always get better. Our job is to continually work harder and be better than our opponent, because everybody's gunning for us. And that was some of the best practices, because he was relentless in his efforts. B, he would just constantly go at Scotty and talk so much trash that for us it was somewhat entertaining. But on the other hand, you also felt bad for Scotty, because you're like, dude, you know, just buck up, play him. Whatever you do, don't talk back. Because then you're just putting fuel on the fire. Just do your best and leave it at that. So there was some entertainment value there as well.
Off the court, away from the practice facilities, was there anything either golf-related, hanging out-related, that personality, that drive to just be better and drive everyone else that shined through with Jordan away from the court?
Well, away from the court, he was just as bad. I mean, on our flights, you know, he would come up to the front of the plane and sit there and play $1 blackjack with me and John Paxson and BJ and Bill Cartwright and be like, dude, you're playing for hundreds of dollars in the back of the plane. Why would you come to the front of the plane and play for $1 a hand blackjack? And his answer was, because I want your money in my pocket. And then I can walk around and I can show it to you just to remind you who has the upper hand.
It's that damn junior high coach, man. It's like that junior high coach, you cut him, right? It led to a lifetime of giving people like you crap like that, Will Perdue.
Well, I mean, you know, and I tell people this. Everybody's like, oh, man, did you see his Hall of Fame speech? What an a-hole. And I'm like, no, you don't get it. That's Michael. He's actually complimenting those people and thanking those people for how they, in his eyes, mistreated him. But because of what they did, they didn't truly mistreat him. They motivated him. That's him saying thank you.
That's interesting. You know, I've always looked at that speech as one of the many examples of, you know, sometimes you can't separate the person from the player. Like, whatever makes a guy brilliant and makes him great at what he does might also make him abrasive. You know, it's like my friend Jason Goff used to say, same thing makes you laugh, makes you cry. Mm-hmm. You know, like whatever that is in you. Because I felt like that was Michael Duncan on everybody one more time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but also it's like you talk about, you can't separate the person and the player. That's one and the same. I'd say he's softened now because, as you just pointed out, he's going to be 56. But it's one of those things. You know what you're going to get. Don't offer to play golf with Michael and then not be willing to gamble with him. Because you know what's going to happen. If you're going to play golf, he's going to want to gamble, and if you don't want to gamble, he's going to ridicule you and embarrass you until you do. You know what's coming. So don't sit there and offer to play golf and want to play, I want to play golf with Michael Jordan. Everybody knows what's going to happen, and then get off the golf course and be like, what a jerk. No, no, no. You stepped into his domain. You have to play according to his rules. That's how it works.
Will, 25 years ago this week is when Jordan reported to spring training as a member of the Chicago White Sox. How closely did the Bulls team, as players, as former teammates with him, were you guys paying attention to what he was doing in Florida in spring training and then in Birmingham?
Well, I mean, I was watching intently because I can honestly say on one hand, you know, I thought he was nuts. But on the other hand, I truly understood the challenge that he was trying to take. I mean, that's the confidence that he had as a player, as a person, that he truly believed, and he proved himself wrong, but he truly believed that he put forth the same effort in baseball that he put forth in basketball, he would be able to succeed. He didn't do that so he could ride around on a bus with AAA Birmingham and AA and all that stuff. He got into baseball because of the love that his dad had for baseball, but also because of the fact that he thought he could succeed. I watched intently. I mean, I went and watched him play in Nashville when the Nashville Sounds played the Birmingham Barons. I went and watched him play. I mean, everybody was rooting for him to succeed after we got over the disappointment of him retiring, because, you know, that's another thing that Michael used to always talk about. Don't take things for granted, because you never know when they're going to be taken away from you. Unfortunately for him, his father was taken away from him. And then, you know, on the back of that, unfortunately for us, championships were all of a sudden taken away from us because he retired and tried to play something else. When we all just assumed coming back, Michael's going to be here, we're all going to be here, we're going to be the favorite to win a championship. Now, we almost made it back, even though we lost to the Knicks, but, you know, that was quite an adjustment that we had to make.
Mm. You know, I remember, I think I learned the lesson for the first time during that era, that when your best player is also your hardest worker, then you got something special. That Michael, just watching Michael and hearing the stories, was when I learned that, because it's like, all right, well, if that guy's got all this ability, but he's still going to bust his butt, then who the hell am I to not do that? It's just, that's leadership by example that can't be priced, right?
No, you're exactly right, because it's one thing. Listen, we can talk about Allen Iverson all you want. The guy was a great player. He just didn't necessarily believe in practice. But at one point, he did practice because he just didn't walk on the basketball floor and become a great player. He had to practice. He had to work hard to be that great player that Allen Iverson was. But once he reached that pinnacle, that's how he looked at it. He says, listen, man, you'll get my best effort on game day. Michael was, listen, you'll get my best effort every day. And another one of the great stories was, is, you know, and this happened quite a lot. If Michael came into practice before practice started and was already talking smack, he was trying to find a way to get himself motivated because of the fact that he had stayed up late all night playing cards. Maybe he was out and about, but he was like, okay, I am now here. I've switched my focus onto practice. I'm here to get better. I got to motivate myself a little bit, so I'm going to talk smack, and I'm going to see if anybody takes the bait. More times than not, people didn't take the bait, but every once in a while, you know, whether it was Scotty, whether it was Horace, whether it was Pete Myers, whether it was Ron Harper, somebody would step up, and you'd be like, big mistake. But then again, you knew at that point, game on, whether you're ready to practice or not, you better be able to at least put forth the effort, or Michael will call you out.
Will, appreciate you taking the time this morning. This was a ton of fun. Thank you for taking it. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday.
All right. You got it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. It's Will Perdue, who won titles with Phil Jackson, won a title with Greg Popovich as a coach in 1999 in San Antonio, and learned a hell of a lot from playing with Michael. Not so bad. He's Nick Schapkowski. I'm Matt Spiegel. It is 670 The Score. We'll be back in a moment. Where your radio dial is at. Matt Spiegel, Nick Schapkowski here with you for another hour and change.
On the bottom of the hour, Will Perdue was on that bottom of the hour. It was brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves have been providing affordable winning hockey for 25 years. Celebrate tomorrow at 3 as the Wolves host the Iowa Wild at Allstate Arena. Enjoy free parking courtesy of Kia and discounted concession items. Visit ChicagoWolves.com.
Several texters really enjoyed Will Perdue, especially once he got going with the Jordan stuff. It's, you know, we were privileged to watch, if you were alive, the greatest to ever do it. And the greatest, one of the greatest athletes of all time in any sport, we were privileged to watch it. And that guy got to play with him and practice with him and ride planes with him and hang out with him. And it's like, you can tell that a lot of these guys knew at the time, just kind of how lucky they had it, and really tried to drink in everything they possibly could.
Yeah. Like, it stands out to me is when he was comparing it a little bit there to just having a chip on his shoulder. Who does it remind you of in sports today? To me, it's Tom Brady, because it's, was picked 199 overall.
Used his whole career.
Yeah.
Used that motivation.
Did the documentary, eight, 9 years ago now on the Brady six, the six quarterbacks taken ahead of him. And he's reciting them and telling you exactly what number they were picked at.
Yep.
Commits it to memory because he used it as a part of motivation. And just, I think he still does. I think it's safe to say he still does. So I'm still proving people wrong from the draft way back when I was drafted far further down than I thought I should have been. The way I was treated at Michigan, where they couldn't wait to not start me because Drew Henson, who went on to play for the Yankees very briefly, had to get reps and had to get playing time. Because
Cowboy
he was
too?
Yes.
Cowboy
I want to say he started against the Bears on a Thanksgiving game.
I think you're right about that.
And that was about the only thing he did in his NFL career. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but it reminds me of kind of like living in this moment, being a kid during the Jordan stuff, hearing all the stories, it's almost like how Tom Brady is discussed.
You know, it's good. And it also reminds me of like when you know that you happen to be playing with genius, you know, soak it up. Soak it up. Joe Girardi knew, and Rosner used to talk about this with me all the time because Rosner loved Maddox more than anybody. Still does. Loves Greg Maddox more than anybody. Not Gary Maddox or Mike Maddox, but Joe Girardi realized, like, oh, this guy, whew, yeah. So every second possible, Girardi would sit next to Greg Maddox in the dugout and talk pitching with him. Talk pitching, talk strategy, talk everything. And he said he used that stuff his whole life as a manager. Use some of that wisdom your whole life. You got it. When you see it in front of you, pause, take note.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like you getting a chance to work with me today.
Something like that. Sure. Going from research projects and cleaning up your coffee to getting to share the airwaves with you. It's a big step.
Right?
It's a big day.
Yeah. It's exactly the same.
Make sure I take my notes throughout the afternoon. Make sure I'm primed and ready to go here when we exit at 2:00.
You just want to roll tape? You want to just roll tape?
Probably. I'm just going to download this podcast right away.
Yeah, it's a good thought.
And probably just play it repeatedly as I go to bed each night, as I wake up each morning.
Yeah. I think that's smart.
Alexa, play the greatest 3 hours in radio history. And it'll be this show.
Shep and I hanging out means that lots of baseball will be discussed, and we have a bunch of different things in a bunch of different directions that we'll do with you next hour right here on 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.